This is HPR episode 2682 entitled, Not All About Blender. It is hosted by Mirror Shades, and is about 46 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, a meandering conversation to soothe the nerves, and warm the soul.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello world, I'm Mirror Shades and I'm with DSearcher today, and we're going to talk about ice cream sandwiches.
I am eating an ice cream sandwich right now, it's tasty.
Because it's an open source ice cream sandwich. No, it's not. But we can make an open source ice cream sandwich.
A reverse engineered ice cream sandwich.
We'll call it. We'll think of a clever name later. Yeah. That seems...
Space Cakes.
Space Cakes.
That ain't very marketed.
We'll sell it alongside the Billy Joe DSearcher algae soda water.
That's going to be a thing. Mark my words.
We'll just take a picture of you in big overalls.
Like,
but with a computer behind you.
Algae soda and barbecue sauce. Boiling hot Texas style.
You got some triple sec to that, you got yourself a meal.
Just take some algae water and break you a few raw eggs into it.
I have a tiger, man.
Calm along with some some Kentucky bourbon or Tennessee sour mash.
this beer was made in the algae casks. Kind of froth.
Tastes like caperhead.
I tried to explain the taste to somebody. Like, hey, what do you drink that? I'm like, yeah, what's it taste like? Florida. You're like, oh, I don't know if I want that. Like, yeah.
It tastes like Gator anus.
It tastes like Florida minus the meth. It's crazy down there. When I was down there, like, my neighbors had a meth lab. It's like, why? So, yeah, just edit that whole thing out.
I thought it was a perfect intro. They don't come more perfect than that.
I drink it out and it tastes like Florida, you know, minus the meth.
When you talk about meth labs, Gator anus, and bibbed overalls in the same...
Gatorade did come from Florida.
Yeah. That's called Gatorade.
Florida Gators. They essentially just bottled up swamp water. I was like, chug this. And, That's where that came from. So, yeah, let's talk about Blender.
Because you need a blender for all that.
I know, right? So you throw some algae soda with some ice cream, and you blend it up, and
And then you have an episode. Good night, everybody.
A little bit of ice, and throw in some Percocets just for good measure. Why not? But no, Blender, the open source project and all that good stuff. You know, mostly people think of it as like a 3D rendering. You know, you do models with it, so it's like...
I remember when it first, my recollection may not be the best, but when I first noticed it, I remember there was a lot of, people wanted something that was like an open source, like 3D Studio Max, or what was the other one that was real famous back then?
Maya 3D.
Yeah.
Or, something similar to like AutoCAD, kind of.
And there was also, what was that other one? Very briefly, it was real popular for a very short period. Bryce. Remember Bryce?
Oh, yeah.
And people wanted something that was like an open source something that, and I remember that's when people started talking about Blender.
Yeah, and then Blender, like, it's grown over the years. Like, it's this beast right now. But I actually started getting into it because I was looking for, you know, open source video editing. And, you know, I was just checking some tutorials online about, like, what, you know, what's good. And everything was shit. Like, everything was just terrible. But then I found this one article just like, try Blender. I'm like, but Blender's for, like, 3D models, and I'm not doing 3D modeling. I'm doing graphics or, you know, video editing. But I loaded it up and I checked it and I'm like, holy shit. Like, it is legit. We can edit videos with like all these different effects. Like, I've got a couple of videos that I just kind of like clipped together. I was kind of doing some like YouTube poops where it's like you take scenes of like different shows. I did like Game of Thrones and you just sit there and kind of splice it up to, you know, for the lulls. But yeah, it actually works just as a video editor. And it's like, you know, you'd think it'd be confusing to do. I mean, there's a lot of buttons, a lot of features to it, but that's kind of like the benefit of having, like, you know, free open source software is, like, YouTube videos will just, you know, free tutorials. So, you know, if you go to Blender, .org, I guess, and .org.net.com, one of them, it'll just, on their page, you know, they've got a link to YouTube, so you can view all the tutorials and stuff.
Yeah, just ask Jeeves.
Yeah, ask Jeeves about it. You know, do a DuckDuckGo, Blender.
Jeeves is gone. You know, we should start our own open source search engine called Ask Joe.
Ask Joe. Ask Joe. Joe knows. But, video editing, and then I started here lately, been playing a lot of Morrowind, because, you know, old video game still runs pretty great, and finally got around to like completing it because there's so many side quests. Well, what do you do when you beat a game? Like, I'll get into modding. And then you download a couple, you check them out, you're like, oh, this is pretty neat. I kind of want to do this, but this other thing, so like you should start doing like retextures and stuff. And then you're like, well, okay, I like the new texture, but the model needs to be tweaked. What can I use? Load up Blender, and it actually, you can edit video game files that way. And, you know, if you don't know how to do it, just look up a tutorial. Pretty fun. So.
I remember the first time I ever got into doing anything like that, I think it was Test Drive 5.
Yeah.
And we had it for PC, several of us, and we bought it. I think I got it out of a bargain bin at Walmart, like $10. And the bad thing was, and I don't know, I'm sure there's a licensing thing, but for some reason, like, the bargain bin version was the full version of the game, but it didn't have the music it was supposed to have in it. But you could stick an audio CD in there and it would play it in the background because the music was supposed to be on the same disc, so
yeah.
This kind of, you know, and I don't know, but it was kind of weird. It didn't have the because I remember there was a bunch of bands that had songs on the game, but you could go in and you could find the folders where the data for the cards were, and I remember pulling up the skins and being like, okay, you could open this in like whatever, Photoshop. I don't think I had the GIMP at that point because that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I would find these tribal tattoo flash online and remove the background and change the color of the tattoo or whatever and stick it on the car so the thing was painted on it. It was kind of badass. And then experimented with some of the sound effects and stuff.
Nice.
When Test Drive 6 came out, though, they had a different, like, the car data, each car's data was an individual, like, zip files, and a buddy of mine figured out, like, most of the data for the car was in just a text file.
Yeah.
So he changed the torque to, like, 999, and that was, and hilarity ensued. soon as you hit the gas, the button for the gas, the car will just jump into orbit. Like you can see the map down here just spinning. And the car was just up here in the corner of the screen. And eventually, if you waited long enough, it would take forever. But eventually, the car would finally fall back to Earth. And when it would hit so fast, it would just wreck. You know? You couldn't control it. Really screwed physics, but fun stuff.
What if you put, like, negative values?
I don't know. That would be great to see. Maybe we'll just go in reverse.
How did the Pac-Man kill screen pop up? yeah, that's interesting because you can use like the GIMP to do textures, and you can use Blender to do the models. Partially you can actually do your own textures in Blender as well. But yeah, it's kind of nicer to use like the GIMP, you know, some other program that we're fairly used to using. And yeah, it just kind of works. And then the cool thing too is, like a play Morrowind on a computer. It's like it's kind of going like Windows. Like how do you do this? How do you play your games? Do you use Wine? No, there's actually Open Morrowind or OpenMW. It's a free and open source Linux based game engine specifically to play Morrowind files. So, got into that project and pretty much just stayed that because like I've switched over to see what it looks like in regular Morrowind. And yeah, there's a couple different features you can add. Like there's some mods that will do tricks with like lighting to make things look like hyper realistic kind of stuff. That's not yet been ported over to Open Morrowind, but still you can get mods to make things look so much better. So, been doing a lot of that lately. It's pretty fun. It's not hard to get into. Just pull up a tutorial and get to doing
it. So, like, I remember, seems like back in the day, because a lot of games, back, especially first-person shooters, would have, like, big modding communities around them. And it would seem like it would start out with, like, the map editors. A lot of those games came with their unofficial map editors. I don't know why games don't, maybe they do.
Well, Morrowind does. It came with its own, the Elder Scrolls construction set, which Open Morrowind also has its, component too. But, but yeah, like I remember, like Doom and Quake had construction sets for them too. Duke 3D, a lot of that.
There was a lot of people I know that I had a couple of friends that really got into like Quake 3 because there was an extensive list of models. Like, and I remember even like characters from other games. Like he would run around with in Quake 3 as Sub Zero because there was Mortal Kombat models for Quake 3.
I know. Me and you used to play Unreal Tournament quite a bit, and I would always set mine to like the Blade model. So like Blade and a Vampire Slayer.
I can't remember what I used to. I remember when we did Quake 2, I had a really killer, I don't know where I found it at, but it was a really killer a model of Darth Maul, because whenever he got killed, his legs would be laying over here, and his body and torso would be over there. And we used to play with this guy named Timmy.
Timmy!
Yeah. And he had I don't know where he got it, but he had a model of number 5 from Short Circuit. You remember that?
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous. Because everybody would get these like big serious models and it comes number 5 and it looks so stupid.
I want to say somebody had like a giant mech or something. That might have been I can't remember what he had. Like some big robot looking thing. Maybe from like, I think it was a model from Appleseed. What's his name? Barbados or whatever. But yeah, I finally got to the point where, that's probably the first time I actually modded it. Just downloaded somebody else's model for it, and then I reskinned it. I just kind of took a picture of my face back when the digital cameras were a thing. You didn't have it, on a cell phone. And I just took a picture of my face and put it over his, and then I think I even took a picture of my work shirt. We were just working at the pizza place, and I skinned that in it. So I'm running around, but it just. Basically me, but my arms were really dark, being Wesley Snipes and all that, and he had like a sword on his back. But I mean, other than that, I was like, yeah, we running around shooting y'all. But I remember, I kind of set like this, you know, I would serve from my computer like when back when we do the LAN parties. Like this wasn't over the internet. This was like come over to my house and just, you know, play games. Well, you know, where I was like the main server, I would sit there and put like all the console commands on mine. So I actually remapped my jump button to like, I'm just reduced gravity. So like I'd run around, everybody'd be jumping, and I'm like, well, I need to get up there, so I'll just turn gravity off and float my ass up there and then turn it back on when I land, you know, kind of deal. And, you know, just much to the chagrin of everyone I was playing. But I did it, you know, like sporadically, just rarely, just not really. I didn't really abuse it, but I stuck away for like all of like 2 seconds to go help. I think it was Tony who was having like an issue getting connected to the game, and like his Ethernet cable was shitty or something. But suddenly everybody started like doing like, Izzy, stop! Like, you know, you're just crashing everything. Like I am not at my computer right now. I'm like looking back and like my mom is sitting there just like, I'm trying to play this game. I'm like, stop trying to jump. Like you're messing the game up. good times.
But that was, I think, Quake 2 was one of the first that had like total conversion mods, like, or like full conversions. Like, it was the same game engine, but it was like a completely new game. Like,
I swear that happened back in Doom.
Probably did. That was just the first one I remember.
Because I remember being on a BBS. And like a bulletin board says, you had to dial into it. It was like a ridiculous amount of money to, you know, so the phone bill was like crazy. You know, back when, you know, you had like long distance bills and all this. But you could do like a dump of like all the files and, you know, actually printed them out on like paper for whatever reason. Read through and be like, what's this? Oh, they have all these WAD files. I'm like,
yeah, I remember that's those dump WAD.
That's for Doom, I'm going to say. So I just started downloading them, and like suddenly you're all the cacodemons look like Barney the dinosaur running through, and you're like, what? How do they do this? They're super elite hackers. And then just go ahead and like rescan it, and now like looking to see how all this done, it's kind of like, oh, it's not bad at all.
.wad and .pack. It was like Paco .pack. Remember that? I don't know really which game used those, but.
And I think even Duke Nukem 3D, I think, used the WAD files. Because it was essentially just Doom, just reskinned. And then Quake, I want to say, was one of the very first like games that used like polygon rendering. Like it was actually like 3D, it wasn't just like sprite based.
There's a couple of older ones. Like that was probably the most famous early one. I have a few DOS games at home that have early 3D that'll actually run on. I have a one of those Toshiba Librettos with the game one, and they'll actually run on there, and it has no 3D rendering capability because it was before, you know, 3D chips came out, so it does have some polygon, but it's kind of hard to look at now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's funny, I can't remember, there was one, I can't remember the name of it, and all the characters were so blocky, they looked like, they kind of did look like the Minecraft people.
Yeah.
And I was like, but the game was supposed to be really serious, which is what made it even more ridiculous, because...
that's almost like a Mass Effect, like, you know, I got into Mass Effect like really late in the series, like, you know, the third one that already dropped, and I don't know if there's one after that, but then I'm like, oh, I'll just play the first one, and I'm just like, wow, these graphics didn't hold up. Like, I kind of wish I'd play it back in the day, so I could ignore all this, but I couldn't do it.
I just recently started playing this series, and I started playing the first one, and then I don't have time to really play video games much anymore, so it went to the side. But I do like tend to play. Like, my video game playing tends to be on emulators
anymore
because I don't like modern games. I don't like how they...
Yeah, my favorite games still, Super Mario World and Super Metroid. Like, they got it right with those two.
I don't, like, games then were, like, self-contained.
Yeah.
You had a story, you had a beginning, a middle, and end, you could get into it, and you could beat it, and it was done. It was like reading a book or watching a movie or anything else. It was a self-contained thing, and now there's, like, well, the idea of, like, an open sandbox sounds great, and then everybody starts doing it, and then there's no story whatsoever. It's just like, there's just this big playground to go do whatever. Okay, well, yeah. What's the point?
Which actually has an interesting side effect, because like Minecraft was actually pretty legit until they added the story to it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Once they added like the Ender Dragon where you can go and complete the game, I just kind of, like a lot of people just stopped playing it at that point, because it's just like, I liked it better when I was building sandcastles.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can still do it, but something about the finality of it just seemed off-putting for people that, you know, that joined the beta, like, or that, you know, alpha, you know. Buying in like $5, you know, before it was even a thing. And then counterpoint to that is, what was it, No Man's Sky?
I've heard of that. I haven't.
It's
played.
Like 100% sandbox with like no actual content. It's like everything's procedurally generated, which sounds great on paper, but then you're out there and you're just like, okay, so what am I actually doing? You're mining resources. Okay, and what do these resources do? Well, they fuel your spaceship. Oh, okay. And where can I go? To other planets where you can mine resources to be able to go to other planets. Like, and the point is to explore. It's like to explore a lot of essentially mining colonies. But, you know, there's like wildlife. But after a while, you kind of notice every monster is just some procedurally generated basis of another. So it's like, oh, this one has three eyes instead of five. And it just, there's no fun to it. Like, when you start playing it, like 15 minutes in, that's what you'll be doing 15 hours later. There's no variance, there's nothing really to do. And people, it was very much hyped, but people were so disappointed. I want to say even like GameStop like redacted their refund policy and was just like, yes, you can return this game. Like, it was bad.
What gets me is, and it started on mobile platforms, like mobile games, because they're all kind of copies of each other in a way, and they're just designed to, they create this sense of I'm working towards something, and then they give you a roadblock, so you have to pay money, and they're just designed to suck money out of your wallet.
Yeah.
And there's no point. Like, even if you get past that roadblock, if you pay the money or you grind on the game for 9 million hours to get past it, then you're just in there. It doesn't really help you. It just blocks you right back into another area where all the players are probably better than you.
It's just a grind and pay kind of thing.
And as soon as that realization sets in, I'm like, done. I don't want anything else to do with this game. It sucks. I'm done. And it goes away. But that's why, like, that has crept into console games now, too. And all games are like that. I'm like, nope, done. I'm just going to fire up the old Genesis emulator.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have things where, like, a game will be, like, advertised. They're like, hey, look, you get to play as, like, I don't know, Wolverine. And you're like, oh man, that looks awesome. I'm going to do that and buy it. And you're like, where's this character? He's not even in the game. Oh, that's the DLC. Like, why didn't you just include it in the game? No, because we want to get more money so you can. Yeah, this is just like.
And then after you pay $50 to get to play as that character, in 2 months they'll shut the servers down. Your game doesn't work anymore.
There was a first person shooter Shadowrun game. And I bought it for $1. And I'm like, man, this is going to be awesome. And I'm like, the video is horrible. I mean, this is like odor kind of game. And I'm like, I've never even heard of this, but I mean, this is going to be cool. It's awesome. I'm like, you know, watching the video, and I sort of play the tutorial. I'm like, all right, it's got some interesting mechanics. You can teleport and do some cool stuff. All right, let me actually figure out what the game is, because there's no like story mode. It's just like multiplayer. And waiting, disconnect, like, they shut the servers down.
Yeah.
Years ago, and they were still selling the game, and it's just like, wait a minute. So I guess that's why it was $1.
I'm a bad skin flint, but I'm worse than most people because I will. If you figure out like PC games, unlike console games, don't have any resale value, really.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll jump on, like, eBay or something, and somebody will be auctioning off their entire PC game collection of, like, 15 years.
Yep.
And you get, like, I don't know, 150 games for, like, $15. And, yeah, some of them aren't going to work, but there's going to be a lot of them that there's the product key right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I got a lot of games, but...
Yeah, I run into that. And I have older kind of stuff, like, you know. But a lot of the older games that, like, you thought was really cool back when you was a kid, and you're just like, I want to play that, and you just, like, never do, because, you know. And then years later, you're on to, like, you know, Grand Theft Auto 3 or some shit, and then you look back, like, man, I missed out, like, a whole generation of games. And you go back, and you're like, man, these are, like, really super legit. And sometimes completely frustrating, but you can see how other games were inspired by it. Like,
I ran into a lot where, like, I've had multiple games that I bought that are, like, I installed and got real excited, like, this looks awesome, and then, oh, servers are gone.
Yeah.
And have been for, like, 12 years.
There's a story I heard. There's a game called, it was some fairly generic, it was like War or something like that. It was like acronym or initialism. But it was, it was a game where you could actually fight, like, you know how there's normally a cap, like 16 players maximum? Well, this game was specifically designed to have, like, the cap was like 256 something.
Oh, you know what?
So you'd just be fighting, like, thousands of people, and it's just meant to be, like, a super massive, you know, war kind of deal. And they shut the servers down on that, but they still sell the game full price for, like, a good year later. It's like, there's some kind of, like, I don't know if it's a boycott, but there's some kind of people putting a game shop on notice, like, why are you still selling this full price, knowing full well that they can't play it, you know, there's no servers and there's no, like, story mode or anything. Like, I don't know if they ever set up, like, I want to say it was, like, World of Warcraft or, like, EverQuest, where people would just write their own game servers and kind of do public servers that way.
There's a couple of games that have done that. One of the ones I got supposedly has a fan-based server thing, but I couldn't get it to work whenever I tried it. I don't know if it's because those servers are gone now, or
yeah.
I just did something wrong because I didn't spend a lot of time fussing with it. Could be a pile of old games, so one game not working is not gonna.
The weird thing is, though, for all these servers that are shutting down, there's still some, like, MUDs out there.
Yeah.
That have been in operation since, like, the internet was a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Zombie MUD comes to mind. Like, ZombieMUD.org, I'm going to say. And I was on that one, like, you know, recently, like, last year. And it's still thriving. It's like, man, you know that MUDs aren't really a thing anymore. And it's like, don't tell us that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Like, you know, beautiful text graphics. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was pretty intense. But it started having that, like, pay-to-play kind of aspect to it, where, like, you could drop some money to be, like, a sponsor so you can get, like, better gear. Weird thing is, my brother actually, he was playing another game, I forget the name of it, it was a MUD, and he did that. He started, like, you know, buying, like, level-ups and stuff. And at one point I asked him, like, how much have you really, you know, spent on this game? Because I would play, like, World of Warcraft around that time. And, hey man, check this out, it's only this much a month. He's like, no, I got this other game to play. I was like, alright, cool. Like, how much have you actually paid for that? He's like, oh, about, you know, $400. I'm like, how long have you been playing? Oh, about 6 months, like. And there's no graphics to it or anything? Like, it must be an amazing game, or, like, you're a sucker. Like, I don't know.
You know what I'm hearing is that we need to write a game.
It sounds like it.
I mean, yeah. Just...
So this one is basically a 3D version of Pong, because that's never been done before. And the thing is, you have to buy the paddles separately,
yeah.
And they break.
And you can get special paddle power up. You know what's funny is there used to be a game, and I'm not kidding.
The Cube.
Well, this one's not even that. This was, I had the demo for it for Windows. It was called Blood Pong. and it was a mashup. It was a mashup of Pong and Mortal Kombat. And there was different paddles you could choose from, like characters that they had like Mortal Kombat powers. Like there was a scorpion one that would throw a spear into the other paddle and jerk him out of the way so they would miss the ball and blood was everywhere. And it was ridiculous.
That sounds amazing.
It was amazing.
But yeah, there's a game, I want to say it's called like The Cube, and it was, what's his name, I'm going to mess it up, like Peter Molyneux or something like that. He's fairly famous like game developer, and he made this game that was strictly like pay to play. Like you could do it without paying, but you only get like the really shitty pick. The object of the game is to get to the center of this huge-ass cube. It's multiplayer, so like the entire world is just chipping away at this huge-ass cube, trying to get to the middle of it. Whoever gets the middle gets a prize, and then just like, you get the shitty axe like one pixel per second, and then you could like pay money to get like the better picks where you're just knocking shit out of the way. And I think there was one that was no joke, like $1,000 to get like the ultimate golden diamond pick or something like that, where you just like take out entire acres per swing. But the thought was, even if you had like, you know, invested serious money to just like knock out a pixel, you could still technically do it with like the little shitty pixel. It's whoever hit that last pixel in the center can get it, right? And it lasted for like a couple months, and you know, just all these people were just like throwing down money, and it's like, what are you actually buying though? Like, do you know what's in the center? Do you know what the prize is? Like, what's, why? And that was the point of the game, was so they could figure out how much they can push people to just like fork over money. And the answer is, there's a lot of rich kids out there that are just like, you know, they're not earning the money, you know, parents give it to them, so it's like, you know, oh cool, I'm just gonna buy this.
And the beauty of that system is they don't actually have to be rich kids. They can just be any kids who's part of a family with disposable income that's what they're tapping in. Like,
but I mean, when you think about it, like even if they've got like $70 a week, like disposable income, that's, you know, if your budget is like right on the cusp or you can't afford any leeway, like it doesn't really matter how rich you are. It's like you've got other things you need to, you know, put your money towards. And it's just weird though, because it's almost like now games are being catered towards that, where it's like, just give us your money, or you don't get to play. And it's like, what happened to just being able to play a game?
Yeah. Like, well, and it's, I don't know, but like most of the time, the games that they're charging you this money for are games that don't look terribly fun, or they look like bad copies of another game that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like there's no, like, I'm not paying you anything for that, because what you got it behind your back, I can't see what it is, and it's probably just a clone piece of crap of the last piece of crap game that did this.
That's why pre-orders are so bad, because it's like you're basically throwing money at a concept and you don't know what you're buying.
Even during the early days, like when, what was it? Was it EverQuest, one of the first ones that started doing that? And
yeah.
I was like, you know, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you had to go out and buy a copy of the game, and then they gave you like a month or two free or something,
yeah.
And you had to start paying, and I'm like, I'm just not cool with that. I'm just not. Right. Like, you know, either give me the game free and then charge me a monthly subscription, or just sell me a game with no subscription.
Yeah.
One or the other, but that's like
Guild Wars
feels like double dipping.
I want to say that Guild Wars, you can just buy the game outright and then just play it. And I think I was playing Guild Wars 2, and it was alright, but like it didn't really draw me in like World of Warcraft did, and I didn't really play that for very long. It was maybe, you know, I got to like level 40 on my main character, just kind of like, I can't really afford to just throw down money, you know, just to level the guy up. Because, you know, I don't know how many people remember this, but like once you hit level 40, you get the flying mounts, and you need like some serious money to like fund that. And if it's your like first character, unless somebody else is buying it for you, you're not getting it unless you're just dedicating all your life to just try to save up enough to, you know, fly around on this like Griffin or something. So I just kind of quit at that point, because I'm like, it's always been a grind. but now it's like really obvious that I'm just grinding towards a goal that is kind of unachievable, but it just keeps me like, you know, dropping like 10 to 20 a month or however much it was. And then that's when I switch over to like Guild Wars 2, which is like, it's free to play, but then I just kind of stopped playing online games altogether. And, but like, the weird thing is my favorite games, like my old games is like, you know, Super Metroid, Super Mario World, those kind of games. Probably went back and got caught up on like Castlevania. Like for some reason I had skipped Castlevania when they first came out. But the other games I play is like Fallout 3 and Morrowind. And like I know there's Skyrim, there's Oblivion, there's all these other games, there's a new one coming out, but it's just something about like the older, you know, because like Morrowind and Fallout 3 is basically the same game. You know, same company makes them, same kind of like mechanics, but it's just go out there and scavenge a bunch of stuff, just see what's out there, do all the side quests, and you just kind of like live in the world kind of deal. But you don't have the annoying kids just running around like, you know, just that kind of stuff to get from like online play. Because online games never really felt like a community, it felt more like a hindrance or anything.
But. Yeah, I have, like, it's weird, like, old games, I want to like RPGs more than I actually do, and so I'll sit down and try to play them. Like, right now, I just started, because I've always wanted to play through, like, the original Phantasy Star for the Sega Master System, and, but the thing is, like, with a lot of those old RPGs like that, the way they were designed was, and this drove me nuts, like, because I'm very, like, action game oriented. Like, I need shit blowing up and bodies flying around right now. Like, I want, you know.
It's very story heavy. Like, right when it starts getting good, it's like, let's do this, like, 30-minute, you know, monologue. And just like, can I do the thing?
Well, I'm even okay with the story. What gets me is the grinding and the way that whole thing is set up. Like, some RPGs I've played have a pacing to them that I can deal with.
Yeah.
And some of them don't. Some of them are like
exponential, just right off the chart.
Yeah, like walk around in a circle for 4 hours fighting the same two monsters over and over again just so you can level up enough to walk over here and walk around in circles for 4 hours. And that just,
It's like, it's good to have it paced so it's like you always feel like you're improving. And you can look back and be like, I started as a blacksmith and now I'm king, you know, that whole trope. Mm-hmm. But it's like when you are seriously just like, hey, go to this corner of the map and just walk in circles, you know, just, you're trying to get that one item that is like a 1 in 128 chance to drop. It's like Earthbound is like a great game, right? But like there are items that are like super rare, but it's like every playthrough you're just like, well, I gotta get the whatever sword, you know. So you're sitting there fighting the same monster because like, you know, by 64 of them, you've got like a half a chance to get it, so. And then it kills me like, ex-wife played it, and like the first time she walked through it, hit it on the first go. It's like, most people spend a good couple of days trying to get that item, so. That's cool.
Yeah.
You start learning how to, you know, hack the random number generator and just give it to you, but.
I'm not above. Like, I used to have different views on, like, cheating on a video game. Like, for me, it was like, some things were like, it depends. Because on a lot of those older games, sometimes you wanted a sandbox experience.
Yeah.
And none of them had it.
Grand Theft Auto 3, throwing the code, all the weapons, all the health, and just run.
But, like, yeah. And sometimes that's what you want to do. Especially, like, you come home from work, and you're pissed off, and you're tired, and you just want to blow off steam, and just, I don't want to work through a story. I just want to blow shit up, and sometimes it was too, like, if some of those old games would have, like, a cheat code built in to let you do that. Like, you know, remember the old first-person shooters all had, like, God and like, Evolve. And so you just don't, you can't be killed, here's all the weapons, and just blow stuff up, but, like, the older systems, there was like the Game Genie and the Pro Action Replay that let you modify the code a little bit.
I like that for technical perspective, like you can just put in random codes to see if they work. Most of the time you're gonna crash your game or something, but every once in a while you'll stumble across something. Like, it's funny because every time I try to jump, like my head disappears. Mm-hmm. That's kind of neat. And then being able to see why that works. Like now it's like looking at load them up anyway to actually check code as it's running. There's one, I don't know if you've seen this, but Super Mario World can be beaten in like 30 seconds.
Huh.
Or quicker than that. It's like the actual like record for like just a normal run. So you can do it in like under 11 minutes. You know, if you go to the starter out, you know, and all that. But you can beat it like in under a minute. I think it's some ridiculous amount of time because it's called the ROM warp glitch. You basically go to like one of the first levels and you basically force the game to load and unload sprites in a very specific sequence. You're essentially peeking and poking, you know, bytes in memory because there's a glitch where like if you pick up a coin as Yoshi is trying to swallow it, it causes the game to glitch out. And if you can set up other factors beforehand, you're essentially writing code in memory, so when you do that, it'll do a jump to that point. And the instructions you just told it was to, hey, warp to the end. And to see somebody pull that off is just mind-blowing.
I've seen, there's some YouTube videos of that stuff. Yeah.
And one guy on a stock SNES, and in the stock game, like, no further hacks. He did have the, you gotta use a multi-tap and hope to clamp down a couple of buttons on pad number two. But he did this in like live, was able to set up a bootloader, and then basically got to the point where he could just run to a position and jump, and his health or like the time would change to like the values. And he sat there and just by hand wrote code into the game as like a secondary bootloader, and then what it's all said and done, he did the glitch, and it essentially reflashed the cartridge to have like other gaming moves on it. One of which was Flappy Bird. So he's sitting there playing Flappy Bird on an SNES, and later expanded it to where he had this hex editor that you could just load up like at any time and show you the exact values of the game. And it just really weird stuff to watch this, but it's like he seriously just jailbroke an SNES cartridge. And that's cool.
Takes time and skill that we didn't have as kids. We had time, we didn't have skill. or what is it, hindsight, that looking back. Like, I don't know, that was always the thing, I guess. Like, two, there's a... when you look at the older consoles, we tended to think of them in a way, like cartridges, we sort of looked at those as like, some we looked at CDs or tapes or VHS cassettes, you know, it's like, as a storage medium, and the console is like a computer that we're inserting the cartridge into, but really, really, the way that console is set up, that cartridge slot is like an expansion slot. It's not really a medium reader like we think, you know, thought of it as kids. Yeah. It's an expansion slot, and that's why things like the SNES, you could have games with like a super effects chip in that cartridge, because that cartridge was essentially an expansion board for the console. And that's why you can have, like, there's a dude I think on YouTube that's playing an SNES game on an NES.
Yeah.
Because he's got an SNES hardware in the cartridge that's stuck into the thing. Yeah. So it's like...
people make like portable, you know, Nintendo 64s just by going in there and the hardware just like redoing them all.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is like, because I remember the experience of like when I was a kid and I'd play a game, I didn't know what the limitations were. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I would do stuff just to see if I could. And you spend a lot of time wasted just like punching walls to see at what point they break. You know, the answer is they're not, they're solid. Mm-hmm. But you always think, like, what if they do have like a health bar and like I'm actually damaging the wall? But you find a lot of glitches that way.
Yeah.
And I remember one game was Spider-Man 1 or 2 for like the original PlayStation. you know, the first level, it's like, the whole MacGuffin is, it was so lacking in capabilities, like they couldn't render the full city, so the plot MacGuffin was like, there's a cloud of noxious gas, so they don't have to render like the bottom half of the city.
Yeah.
So you're just swinging from like the tops of it, and then you don't really think, what am I swinging off of if I'm on top of the building, like are there cranes around or whatever. They don't care about that, but it's like they only render the top of the building. You can't touch the ground because it's, you know, poison gas. But I found a thing that on the, like the first level is divided in like two parts, and on the end of the second part, you're supposed to swing out to a building, there's a cutscene, like the boss. Instead of doing that though, you can crawl down the building to the fog, and it won't kill you, but you could then zip line out to the building and crawl up. So it's like you go underneath the trigger point for that cutscene.
Oh yeah.
And then you can crawl around to the back of the building. And you know what's on the back of that building? A debug screen. Because it crashes the game. And it seriously looks like a Linux console's popping up. You got white text on black background. And it just spits out a bunch of hexadecimals. You know, it's like, well, did I just crash the game? And like, what code is it showing me? But yeah, it basically goes into a debug mode. It freezes it up. But it's just the fact where you can do that consistently. Kind of amazing, because like you don't realize the limits, and you just think, what if it's possible? It's like getting, it's like Grand Theft Auto 3, getting someone to get in your car the first time, you're like, oh my god, they actually got in my car. And then they're like, wait, they're across the, what if I go to like an alley, and the car starts moving, you're like, they actually put this in the game, and you think you're the only one in the world to discover it. But it's like, yeah, you're banging a prostitute and you're at that thought, and then you're like, well, give me my money back and kill her, and like every dollar that you gave her you can get back, and you're just like, I mean, it makes sense from like real world perspective, but like I'm used to playing like games where you didn't have that range of,
yeah,
you know, it's just like now games are just like you're more surprised if you can't do something.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.